Blog Talk Radio.
Can y'all help me? Put your hands together. Come on. Y'all can sing with us. Can you hear the sound of freedom? We're free because the curse of sin has been broken. And Jesus Christ has set us free.
Love it.
This is the night. We are overcomers. You are listening to Don't Give Up Radio. I am your host, Jackie Wayans, and I'm really thankful to have the opportunity to be with you here another night to let you know not to give up. It doesn't matter how bad this week was. It doesn't matter what you went through or are feeling right now at this moment, how dark, how tedious, how deep your emotions may run. I'm here to tell you that God is no respecter of persons, and he will bring you through his power and by his grace if you lean and depend on him. How do I know? Not only from my own story, but from the stories of the guests that I have on to share with you. And tonight, Tenille Jackson is back with us once again with another book that she has turned out with the help of Dominique Wilkins, and we're going to talk about I'm In, She's Out, the title of the book and what it means, and there's a little twist to it. It's not exactly what it sounds like, but it's very powerful, especially as we continue this discussion of relationships. And we're moving away from just the romantic side of things to the practical, everyday living it out and working with each other in all the various type of relationships that we have in life with one another. So, Tenille, thank you for being back with us again.
Oh, no problem, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. So, this book here, another one to add to the wonderful collection of books that you have, and we've gone through a couple, but we haven't even scratched the surface of all that you do. How did you come up with the concept and the title for this book?
Well, you know what? It's really funny. Dominique and I, we were on the phone one day, and we were just talking just in general, and then we kind of transitioned into talking about our personal lives and our relationships and things like that, because both she and I are married. And so it was just really funny because we found ourselves, the fact that we had encountered some of the same situations, but the way that we chose to handle them would be totally different. And, you know, she would laugh and say, wow, you know, I'm out, but you in, you know, or something like that. So we kind of came up with the concept because initially we were thinking about possibly conducting relationship workshops. And then, you know, she was saying, well, you know what, instead of doing a workshop, because a workshop would really only help like a few people when we could do it, why don't we write a book, you know, She's Out, I'm In, and let's talk about the various relationship topics that most people face. And, you know, she was saying that it probably be good to use this type of book for either newlyweds or individuals that's newly in relationships. And so that's what we decided to do, just basically come up with a story or come up with a book where it delves on what happens if you decide to stay in a relationship or what happens if you decide to get out of the relationship based upon these various situations that we discussed.
Wow. So, you know, Dominique's not able to be with us tonight, but one of the things that's so great here is the two of you being friends and really finding out that there were similarities in your lives, whether it was how long you were married, being the same age. You both are from or have blended marriages, blended families.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
You were able to kind of talk through these different phases of your life and realize, even though you went through the similar circumstances, your responses to those circumstances were very different. And for Dom,
exactly,
it was more like, you know, she's in a difficult situation, she's in a bind, and it's like, I'm out. And I think that's the response that most of us have when we are in a relationship that doesn't seem like it's going to work or it doesn't seem like it's going in the direction we want it to or we'd like it to, is to have, even if we don't say it verbally, there's this mental and emotional disposition that says, I'm out, you know, and so that's really what you're addressing in the book.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, and you said it perfectly. so many times in situations, you know, you go through various issues in relationships, whether it's, you know, we always talk about the cheating, you know, or financial issues, but there are so many other issues that come up throughout the course of a relationship. And like you said, that was pretty much the premise of the book, the fact that everyone may not choose to fix the relationship. Everyone may not choose to stay in, but you're going to do one or the other. You'll either stay in a relationship or you'll leave. And the fact of the matter is that regardless of what you choose, someone is always going to talk about you for whatever choice that you make. If you choose to stay, somebody is going to talk about you. If you choose to leave, somebody's going to talk about you. But the premise of this book is really to just give you some tools to help you despite what choice that you made.
So talk to me about the premise of the book in terms of how it's written, how you lay out this concept of she's in and I'm out and what it looks like.
Well, pretty much, okay, because both Dominique and myself, although we've both been writing for a while, we have two different genres. She is the fiction writer, I'm the nonfiction writer. So that is pretty much I specialize in nonfiction self-help. So what we decided to do, she basically came up with the concept. So she used fictional, and it's not really fictional, it's just fiction in the fact that it's not based off of a particular person, but we pretty much gathered the various issues that we discuss, and again, there are seven issues: abuse, blended families, communication, money, self-esteem, setting boundaries, and trust. So those are the seven issues that we discuss throughout the book. So every chapter discusses one of those issues, and she tells the story. So she pretty much sets the scene for what it is that has happened in each of these scenarios, and then the fact that at the end, the person decides to leave. They say, I'm out. And so then I come back with from a nonfiction aspect and just talk to you from the point of view of, okay, if you decide to leave, then this might be what you encounter, this might be what happens. But if you decide to stay, this might be the way that you may be able to salvage it. And then, of course, there's always that question that's bounced back to the reader. Do you feel that this relationship is salvageable? So, in other words, if this was you, would you stay or would you leave? What is it that, what would you do? What choice would you make?
Well, I like that. I like that format. So you have these scenarios there, and what we'll get to is that the scenarios are not that simple. You know, sometimes when you pick up these books, the scenarios are so, you know, idealistic and not practical,
mm-hmm.
but I think you guys really went to the heart of the matter. And so at the end of each of those scenarios, the person really is at the point where they throw up their hands and they say, I'm out. And that person who wrote that was Dominique. So Dominique is actually on the line with us now. Hi, Dom. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Good evening, ladies.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Tanil just talked about the seven, just naming, you know, the seven areas that the book covers. But we were talking about the fact that you wrote the scenarios for the I'm out section. So talk to me about when you're speaking about relationships and, you know, you're collaborating between the two of you. I mean, that in itself is a relationship. So let's start there in terms of building the book and how the two of you worked together.
Well, Tanil and I both have we both share a lot in common. We have the same backgrounds. We have the same drive, and we have the same love for people and wanting to see people do better and wanting to kind of do our part in stopping the hurt. So having those same drives, and our books, our personal books, reflect that. And having read some of her books, and she's read, has been exposed to mine, we felt that, and through our conversations, it just came out that our kids, the family, and everybody was kicking in while we were on the phone, and then we shared some things like, oh, my goodness, they're killing me. And it's like, me too. So we should write a book. Other people are probably going through this too. But we should tell this because somebody's probably going to get out. But they could stay in. It's really not that serious. And then that's where She's Out, I'm In came in.
Wow. So now how did the practical dividing of the book work out? Because you have different expertise.
Well, my books are, the scenarios are pretty much just a very, very, very short version of the exact same way that my books are written. In order for you to, the way I write is I put you in these people's lives. I walk you through their steps so you can see what they're going through so that you can understand how it is and how you can just want to actually leave. And at the end of my book, that's when I offer my own personal suggestions on what you should do and going forward and how things could work. Whereas, so that's why I do the She's Out. And because Tamil does the self-help and her main focus on how to stay in. And so because she's so good at that, when I wrote my scenarios, I was purposely trying to think of some really good hard-hitting scenarios to make her just stomp her. And unfortunately, the girl is just, she is what she is. She is the international award-winning author for a reason. And she solved them all with some very good hands-on, relatable things that you can do solutions.
Yeah, but I really love that about your side of things because you really thought of hard-hitting scenarios that are difficult situations that people in relationships go through, and you wanted to stump her. You know, you wanted that, but she, you know, definitely, Tonil, you had a response for each and every one of them. And so, you know, this book is very strong in the fact that it reaches that. Now, Tonil, you mentioned the seven areas, but it's my understanding that it's based upon three major, the ABCs, rather, of relationship. Is that correct?
Well, it's not, okay, all of the book is equal throughout. It's the fact that because we are actually doing a reading tour coming up in April, we're doing a few stops in Chicago, we're doing a few stops in May in Indiana. So what we want to do, of course, we couldn't highlight the entire book. So we did pick, like, the ACTs, I believe, is what we highlighted, Dominique, if I'm not mistaken. We're going to highlight the abuse chapter, the communication, and then the trust chapter. So, like, the ACTs, or we might have said the ABCs. I really don't remember right now. But if it is the ABCs, it's abuse, blended families, and communication. I don't remember. It's either ACTs, like Act Now or ABC. I don't remember which acronym we use, but it's one of them. And so we really, yeah, so it's really the point of it really is just to be able to give the individuals that come to the various places that we're at while we're at these different stops, just give them the opportunity to get some excerpts from the book so that way they can get an inside look at what we're talking about, what we're dealing with, and then we're going to be able to interact with them as well, give them an opportunity to ask their own questions and, you know, interact with us and ask us questions similar to what you're asking us here. So that's really why we're taking, like you said, the ABCs of the book to discuss it just so that we can give the readers an inside look.
Tonight we are going to stick with the ABCs of things because, you know, we can't give you everything, guys. You're going to have to just get your hands on the book in order to get all those
exactly.
7 points. So when we come back from this next song, we're going to go right into the ABCs, abuse, blended families, and communication. And as we started just with the title, you know, sometimes we're the ones who get in our own way with the way we think about the problems that we're facing. And at that point, we really have to pray and ask God to just deliver us from ourselves.
Deliver me from myself. Search my heart again. If nobody else knows,
you already know.
You know all of my sins. Maybe I can fool my church.
Maybe I can fool my friends. But you already know.
If nobody else knows, you know all of my sins.
I can
dress up in the baddest suit in the world. Slip on that in every
shoe.
I can carry around my Bible every day. But Lord, you and me know the truth.
You know my discrimination. You know how I treat my neighbors.
My possessiveness, my arrogance. Deliver me from my sin. Deliver deliver me from myself. Search my heart again. If nobody else knows,
you already know.
You know all of my sins. Maybe I can fool my church. Maybe I can fool my friends. Deliver me from if somebody gets me,
and I love all my enemies,
though they may try to kill me, Lord, I know the biggest enemy is the one that is within. Deliver me from myself, deliver me from myself, search my heart again, if nobody else knows,
you already know.
Maybe I can fool my church. Maybe I can fool my friends. Deliver me from, deliver me from, deliver me from
about you. About you, designing myself.
I am a father.
But I don't know Jesus for myself. I am
with
my nation. He sees how we treat our neighbors. He knows our
possessiveness, our arrogance. Deliver me from myself.
You're listening to Don't Give Up Radio. I am your host, Jackie Wayans, and we are here tonight about to discuss some very real relationship topics, the first one of which being abuse. And it's one that's not talked about often, especially not in the sector of religion or faith or Christianity. So I have to ask, what led you guys to choose this topic?
I think that, and I'll let Dominique go into the actual stories of them, but I believe that we pretty much want to discuss topics that, people pretty much try to shy away from, because, again, in this society, we pretty much blame cheating for everything. But, again, there are so many issues that take place in relationships that cause relationships to break up that not always have to do with infidelity. So we wanted to attack some of the issues that we felt that readers would really be able to identify with. So the two of us just sat down and we just kind of came up with various issues, and we also want to put twists on the issues where it's not always the female that falls victim to whatever the topic is, so that way it would make the book universally appealing to both women and men.
So, Dominique, you did something very interesting along that line when you wrote your scenario. Am I correct on this? Is it a scenario where the man was actually in the abusive role? Not the abusive role, but the victim of abuse.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. And Tennille, in the solution, she pointed out exactly how uncommon that really is. The truth of the matter is we look at men like they are unstoppable, but they really are just as human, and they care and have emotions like we do, and sometimes women take advantage of that. So in that scenario, it was a man. He was being abused. He was a victim of that, and he was in pain in his relationship.
And in every relationship, you know, we're told, we hear it from counselors, we hear it from the pulpit, that it's a 50-50 in every relationship, and it's hard to kind of think that through when you are in an abusive relationship. I think you actually even have some stats on male abuse in this country.
Yes, I mean, and it was something that as I was doing my research that I came across, and I couldn't help but to put it in the book, that every 38 seconds in America, a man is actually abused, and we have to understand that that was referring to physically abused, but we have to also remember that abuse is not simply being physical. You know, abuse can also take the forms of emotional as well as verbal and mental abuse. So, you know, so many times we overlook that, or we feel that, you know, a man is less of a man. We compare being macho to being a man, and that's not always the case. And so, you know, that's why we really kind of wanted to put it out there. And, again, there are hotlines and helplines for men just as well as women, you know. And so if we do have any male listeners and any males that read the book that are victims of abuse, you know, don't feel like you are less than a man to report it or to seek help if you are receiving that abuse.
Yeah, and I think that's so important to say because, you know, just like women are still just getting to the place where they feel comfortable taking off the mask in this area, and it's still a challenge, how much more so for men who feel that they're going to definitely be judged by other men because they are, quote-unquote, allowing that to happen to themselves. So by all means, I'm glad that you are not just bringing out the spiritual and the emotional, but you're also bringing in the practical by offering places where there are hotline numbers or shelters and things of that nature. What are some practical things, though, that someone can do when they're in a relationship that's taken a wrong turn? There's abuse, you know, how do they move? What kind of questions should they ask themselves?
Well, I mean, we know the obvious one with physical abuse. You know when you're being, you know, physically abused. But I think the harder ones to tell are from the verbal or even the emotional ones. And I think that, you know, anytime you are having to question whether or not your partner loves you, that in and of itself is a huge key, you know, because you should always know, regardless, and it's not to say that everything is going to always be hunky-dory and in the moment that you have an argument that is over, but, you know, if you find that consistently your partner is, you know, giving negative words, using, you know, and I'm not just saying profane language, but also in addition to that, where there are constant put-downs, you know, calling you stupid or dumb or, you know, you'll never amount to anything, those are things that you should look at also, because those are forms of verbal abuse, and after a while, it will take an emotional toll on you where you begin to buy into it. You may begin to believe that you're nothing, that you know, so all of these things, they kind of go hand in hand. And so those are the types of things that you want to be on the lookout for.
Right, definitely. And not just being told I love you after you've been abused. That is
sure.
Not love.
Yeah.
It's not what I'm
yeah.
Like. Then you address something else that's not talked about a lot, and if it is talked about, it's idealized. Blended families, you know, we always think back to the Brady Bunch. I know I grew up on the Brady Bunch, but blended families, let's talk about that. What should people be thinking about or looking for as they're going into a relationship with someone who has their own children, you have your own children? What should be on the table?
Well, I'll go through mine first, and then I'll let Dominique, you know, come back with her standpoint. But I know that we both have blended families. My husband and I, we've been married for 12 years. But when we came into our relationship, he had a daughter. His daughter was 7 when we first got together. And it's always difficult when you are dating someone with a child, because at that point you're not just trying to get along with them, but you also have to some extent, you know, get along with that child as well. It's about bonding with the child as well, because they kind of come as one. And I'm one who I kind of just bought into the system. I've never been the person who believes in the word step-parent, you know, and maybe because I grew up in that household, that type of household, but I always refer to it as the third parent. And I never treated my stepchild as though she was any different than the children that I gave birth to. I always treat her the same. And I just think that so many people make mistakes when they try to give their significant other an ultimatum where they say it's either your child or it's me, you know, because that child was there before you got there. So I just feel like when you come into a family, you already know that your mate has someone else, that you would be, you know, really foolish to try to make them choose you or that child. And the best interest would be to find some way for the three of you to get along.
This is so important. And I know, Dom, I want to hear your feedback on this too, but you know, so many court cases and sad stories. Even this year I was watching The Biggest Loser, and there was a young lady there who, after her mom died at 16, if that wasn't traumatic enough, the stepfather took his kids and said, see you later, and left her, abandoned the other children. So it's so important that you take the time to look at this very real and see what kind of commitment. And I think, Tenille, one of the things you mentioned is the fact that, or maybe it's you, Dom, that he needs to love the child as much as he loves you. Is that you who thinks that?
You know, I think we both think it, but I absolutely agree with that, because the key to it is that, first of all, let me say this, which I want to say, that I'm going to be a mind reader right now and say I'm speaking on behalf of every woman in the world. And man, also, you meet somebody. If your child loves that person, at that moment, you're sold too. Once they're sold, it's like when you go to the store. If the kid says, oh, my goodness, I want this, I got to have this, and you're like, give me the toy. I want them to be happy. And when they're happy, you see them playing with it, you're so happy. Like, this is the best thing I ever bought. This kid won't be quiet about it, you know. So if you find a mate that feels that, has that connection with your child, your relationship is inevitable to be happy. It's going to take off. And so if for some reason, and that's so terrible that that happened to the woman on in that reality show, but if that happened after your child had such a connection with that potential mate, then you know, you can rest peacefully knowing that while you're going, that connection is still going to be strong. You don't ever worry about the connection breaking just because you're not there. They're just going to have a smaller circle. It's just that simple.
And would you say that kids always have some problem initially with another adult coming in that's not their original parent?
I think, go ahead, Dominique.
Well, I just think that it depends on, first of all, it depends on how their original parent is. If the original parent wasn't so great, and if they felt that the original parent wasn't making you happy, when you're not happy, kids aren't happy, and they can see that. And their priority is to make you happy. So if their original parent, their biological parent, is not making you happy, then they're looking for somebody for you practically. So they're looking, hoping that the next person is going to work. But at the same time, they're also leery of this person hurting you again. So it just depends on how that person comes across. If that person happens to come across as genuinely loving of you and your child, there really isn't a fight. It's just you got to get past the test. It's like a job interview. Once you stack up as who you say you are, then everything else will just fall into place. But you got to know that wherever you go, you're on a job interview. If you want to get into this family, you've got to make waves with the kids and everybody. So I just think that everywhere you go is a test. You know, it just depends on what happened to the previous employee who was before you. Did they mess it up for you, or did they make a good way for you? So that's my thought.
Well, what if it's just not meshing, though? If it's just not meshing, if it's just not working out. So you really like him or her, but it's just not working where the kids are concerned.
Well, you know what? I think to kind of go with what Dominique said, I think a lot of times that's really the case if you have a younger child. I think, like, sometimes when you have older children, whether, you know, like 11, 12 on up, then they have their own little personal agendas as well. So it's not necessarily just about whether or not they're pleasing to you, but they do have their own agendas. And to answer your question, I don't think that it's solely, okay, if my child likes you, then you're in. So I don't think that it's just the fact that the child gets to make the choice, and I must speak for Dominique, I don't know that I can, but I don't think that she's saying that the child is the one that chooses the mate. I think what we're saying is regardless of, you know, it works better if your mate and the child gets along, but in the cases in which, you know, for whatever reason, your child is not really accepting to your mate, whether it's because they're comparing them to the biological parent, whether it's just because they don't feel like that you should move on with your life, because sometimes, you know, you might have it where the one parent may not be very strict or, you know, have a disciplinarian role, but the parent that is, or the, you know, mate that's coming along has more of that restriction going on, and so they show more of an authoritative figure, and the child may rebel against that. So I don't think that either of us are saying allow your child to be the one to choose your mate. But I think that with time, love will conquer all. With time, if that child sees, you know what, this person is making my parent happy and this person is actually going to be around for my family, they're going to be here consistently, then eventually the child will, you know, go ahead and because children, they are very, you know, they're very flexible. They go ahead with the program. It might take them a minute, but again, if consistency is there, then they'll go along for the ride.
It's like what you said, it's love. I think, you know, blended family is basically establishing love, and if there's genuine love, as you guys have eloquently said, then eventually there will be that. But I think also you're also being clear to say that if it's not meshing, it's okay to take a step back and to pray and just to make sure, you know, to use all your senses and all the wisdom available to make sure there's nothing off here that maybe the child is picking up on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Of course. Okay. You pray before you make any big decision.
Yeah, absolutely. So communication, I mean, our time is going so quickly. Communication, it seems as if that's the running theme. We hear that in everything we're dealing with, relationships to being at work. What's your perspective? What's your take on communication that you share in the book?
In the communication scenario, what we did is, once again, Tanelle is just so funny, she stumped me. But what I built is a problem where, once again, it was the man, and he wanted to just spend some time with his wife. His wife had a new job, and she was really excited about her new job at the salon. And she wanted to change her schedule so she could try to be there when the money was there. And that kept her away from being home, and he wanted her to be at home. But he also wanted to be understanding of her new job and her needs and so forth. And so he spent a lot of time trying to think about what he can do to try to make it work instead of communicating his problem and his issues with her. So he kept trying to find a way to get in with her. And so he just, every time he looked up, he said, you know what, you work Monday, Tuesday through Saturday, and on Sunday, instead of you coming home to be with me, now you're going to church with the girls at the salon. So he said, now I only have you on Monday, and I have to work on Monday, so that's a part-time thing. So he was like, okay, you know what? How about I go to church with you so I can be with you on Sundays? And so, again, not communicating that to her, but this was just an idea that he came up with, it still didn't turn out so well. He still got frustrated in the end, and it was just too much for him Why? Because even though it just sounds like the best thing in the world for him to do, it just made so much sense, and he was so understanding, it still wasn't coming across to her. And so I touched on that because it happens all the time. We assume that people know what we're thinking. We assume that it's common sense for you to come home at night, that you've been out for 10, 12 hours, come home, that I want to talk to you. So this particular scenario hit those buttons, and I'm pretty sure everybody has had a point where they felt like, why don't you understand that this is what you're supposed to do? It's common sense.
Right, right. I always say there actually isn't any common sense that we have in this universe. But basically what I hear you saying here is not to hide your feelings, to not be secretive either, you know, because there, I think as women in particular, we can say in our minds like we're going to give something a certain amount of time, and if we don't see any progress within that time, it goes back to the title of the book, I'm out. And the person has no idea that we were doing that. They didn't know that they had this kind of preset learning curve that was, you know, in the back of our mind somewhere. Toniel, you said something very interesting about that, dealing with the fact that all of us have been a certain way for a certain period of time. And then we want to engage ourselves in a relationship with someone and just snap our fingers and have change happen overnight. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Of course. You know, I think for me, again, I am a communication specialist. That's what one of my degrees is in. And so I have a little bit of bias when it comes to communication, and that I believe that no matter what the problem is, it stems from the way that you are able to communicate, whether or not you're an effective communicator. And so my thing is, I don't feel that we give our relationships enough time to grow. Like you just said, we come into it feeling like, okay, well, you know what, I'm going to give you 3 years, I'm going to give you a year and a half. But we've never communicated that to our partner, because especially if you take that extra step and you're now married, marriage vows is till death do us part. So, you know, you're under the impression that however long it takes to get it right, we're in this thing working together until we get it right. However, you know, again, we're into quick fixes. You know, hey, I got 3 years. I'm not going to allow you to spend all of my lifetime. I'm not going to waste all of my time on you when that's in actuality what you have vowed that you would do. So I just think that, you know, communication is so key to the success of any relationship, because that's how you really go about with one another day to day. You know, whether it's something as simple as, are you coming home tonight or are you working overtime, to don't forget, you know, to pick up groceries, to, you know what, my ex is going to be in town and I just wanted you to know. Like, all of these conversations, whether they are easy or even uncomfortable, they're necessary because they help to build trust and they help to establish rapport between you and your partner.
Well, Dominique, I want to ask you, what happens, because I think people who have been in relationships and have it fail, you get to a point where your trust has been trampled on. And so communication and relationships become more difficult. How do you proceed when that has happened?
Well, of course, if you're having trouble talking to your mate one-on-one, that's the two of you, then any time you're having a discussion and you can't come to a resolution, you need to bring in a third party, get a third neutral party, and it's okay to do that. And when I say neutral party, I'm not talking about the girlfriend, your cousin, your mother-in-law. I'm referring to you can go to your pastor, you can go to a therapist, anybody who is able to see outside of your own personal background, your own personal issues, what you've been going through, just see the truth. And they can actually talk to you and pull out the things that you're saying, each of you are saying, and point out, like, listen, this is hurting and this is what you should do. And it totally makes sense. It sounds crazy, but they can just be repeating something maybe that one person has been saying, but they can come up with a way to compromise. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with praying about it, going to this, if you go to your pastor, the three of you to come together and you can pray together, and then you can come up with a solution that works. Sometimes it does take a third eye to be able to just see it slightly different from what you were doing that wasn't working at first.
And I know for me, Yeah, I mean, Camille, you talked about your childhood growing up, and even though your stepfather always made you feel like your own, the relationship between he and your mom wasn't always that smooth. How did that affect you when you entered into your own blended family, your own marriage?
You know what? I think that a lot of times you end up emulating what you see, you know, and I know that's pretty much how it was for me, because my parents, although they were married for 20 years, they were off and on, you know, many times together, separated, and it was a different era then, because in those times, the children were not privy to what was going on, but, you know, we didn't know why we were together separated. My mother never, you know, talked badly about my dad. It was never, you know, well, we're trying to be friends with her and she's talking negative about him. We would just look up and, you know, we'd be moving, and then next thing we knew, they would be back together. So she never allowed us to have ill feelings toward our dad regardless of what was going on between them. But I think the way that it affected me was because probably for the first, like, maybe 2 or 3 years of my marriage, you know, whenever my husband and I would have an argument, the first thing I wanted to do was leave. You know, I would be like, well, you know what, just forget it. I can just go, you know. And I thank God, because my husband had the total opposite experience. His parents, you know, like, they kind of had the same situation as my mom and dad, but they never separated. And, you know, his mother was always praying. His mother was always, you know, the stronger party within their marriage. And that's what he saw, and that's how come for him it was always this thing that no matter what goes on, we stay together. And it was because of his strength and the way that he grew up and his outlook that kept him. Even when I would say, okay, I'm leaving, I'm done, I'm walking out, come on, let's come back together, let's try to fix this, let's try to work it out. And it, like I said, it took me a good 2 or 3 years before I was able to see, you know what, the way that my parents handle things isn't the best way to handle things. So I have to come outside of what I saw growing up, and I have to really, like, handle this myself for my individual relationship, not because this is how my parents did it, but I have to be able to work my own marriage out for myself.
Well, you know, that reminds me of one of my new favorite songs called One Day at a Time. So I'm just going to play that right now. We're going to come back and wrap it up.
I stand amazed at what God has joined together, 'cause with the good times, there were a few bad days, but we held on to the promise, the promises we made on the first day. I still choose you to have hope until we're old to stay. The challenges we faced seemed impossible, but we made it. Now through any season, you remain the reason I remember and still choose you. To have the hope until to say, but this one thing still remains. don't want to face tomorrow without you.
To have to hold
us here, we're all
just faithful to this
love.
One day at a time. That's what it's all about. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. And, you know, if you are listening and you're having a rough patch in your relationship and you haven't got that intimate relationship with the Lord, I'm here to tell you that Romans 10, 9 and 10 makes it really simple. If you trust in the Lord with all your heart, well, long verse, if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that Christ is Lord, you shall be saved. It's really that simple. That is the first step. And as spouses or in any relationship, if you're always the best that you can be, then you will be pleasing to God and he will be able to enter in. We're in the last few minutes of the show, but there's just a few points that I want to get to, ladies. So I'm going to just alternate the questions for the sake of time. So, Tanil, I'm going to start with you. Money. We covered it last week. I had a tax specialist on the show. It's the number one problem in marriages. I know you hit a scenario about that in your book. Just, you know, talk to us a little bit about that scenario between the husband and wife with the different financial backgrounds.
Well, just the gist, again, because it's for the sake of time, the gist is the two individuals have two different backgrounds, and so how to spend money becomes an issue. And in terms of, because Dominique is the one that wrote the scenario, but in terms of solution-wise, one of the things that we have to always remember is that, again, communication is key. When you are dating, so many times people wait until they get married to want to discuss everything, and that's absolutely the wrong time to discuss solutions. You need to be discussing all of these heavy issues while you are dating, so that way when marriage comes, there are no surprises. And so, you know, you need to discover and discuss at the very beginning, how do we handle our money problems, or how do we handle the finances? Are we going to have separate accounts? Are we going to have one joint account? Who's going to manage the money? You know, all of these are things that we're like, I don't want to pry while we're dating. But when, you know, you need to do that then. You need to do it while you're dating so that if there are disagreements, you don't have any vows. You don't have a ring on your finger. You don't have any, you know, obligations to this person. And if you just don't like what they say, then it's okay if you walk away. Don't wait until you get married to then lay it on the line how you're going to handle your finances. So everybody has different backgrounds regardless of whether it's unemployment, employees, somebody's making 10 figures, somebody's making two. You know, like, you just need to discuss how it is that you're going to decide to handle your finances so that way it won't become problematic later on.
Right, and I do agree that things become harder also once children come into play. It's one thing when you're tolerating it and it's just the two of you, especially when it comes to finances, but once kids come into the picture, it can quickly unravel and become a whole big mess, a definite mess.
Exactly.
Dominique, did you have anything that you wanted to share in terms of the money piece?
Well, you know what, I do want to say that sometimes some people, when they're dating, they feel like instead of, like Tanil said, taking on, actually, if you realize that this is something you want to go to the next level, instead of tackling it then, there are some people who think that his money is his and mine is mine. So even if he makes bad decisions and they go to lavish restaurants all the time, it's fine because he's spending his money. So you can't come into a relationship and this is how you're doing it, and then when you get married, then you go, oh, we can't keep going out. Why do you keep spending your money at this? because you didn't say it when you were dating, because you have to, if you're with somebody, you have to protect their money as you would your own, as if you were together at that point. So if you just started there to say, well, you know, baby, we don't have to keep going out to the Olive Garden. You know, maybe we can get McDonald's and just go home and eat at home, or I can fix something, you know. So that's definitely something to watch out for. Just don't let that get out of control when you're dating and you're enjoying the nightlife and courting each other.
And, you know, we talked about therapy and counseling earlier on, and reaching out and trying to go to pastors, knowledgeable friends, different areas. What if you have a partner that is resistant to therapy? And I've asked this question of a few of my guests because it's something that's very real, where you have one out of the two that doesn't feel like they want to be a part of that process. What do you do?
Well, you know what? I think that at some point it really boils down to whether or not you want to save the relationship, because at some point it becomes an excuse to say, oh, I don't believe in counseling, or I don't believe in therapy. It becomes an excuse after a while, when the bottom line is this is what's necessary to salvage our relationship. That really kind of lets you know whether or not the person is game. But if we're both saying that we want to do whatever it takes to save this relationship, then sometimes counseling is what it takes. And so if you really love your significant other and you really want to work at it, again, I'm not saying that the first step has to be counseling, but if you have exhausted all other possibilities, then don't exclude counseling because of ego, or because you feel like nobody else can do it. I don't want anybody in my business. Somebody else may be able to help give you pointers to get your relationship back on track.
And Dominique, I think one of the things that you've said that I really appreciate is the fact that instead of worrying about all the what-ifs, just get there. Just get to that place of help and assistance that you need.
Exactly. You can't knock until you tried. You can't say, I don't like counseling, if you don't go.
And what if you're afraid that once you get there, they'll be pretentious? You know, they'll make it seem like everything's your fault, or, you know, the blame game begins.
Again, any professional, any therapist is not going to play the blame game. That's not, because nobody can judge. They can only say that, hey, this is right or this is wrong. I see this might be an issue. Maybe you should try this. So it's not, that's not what therapy is. That's not what counseling is. If you feel like that's what's happening and it's clearly that's what's going on, it's clearly leaning to one side, they don't see what you're saying at all, because everybody has a point. Everybody's coming from somewhere. But if that's clearly one-sided and everything that you're saying is completely wrong, and you happen to talk to somebody else, get a second opinion. Everybody is not going to work. Get a second opinion. And if two people say it, then maybe you are clearly wrong. But definitely get a second opinion.
We've got a minute left. Tell the people where they can find your book.
Okay, well, they can go to, we both have our own individual websites, but if you go to our joint website, which is specifically for the book, shesoutimin.com, that will actually take you to our individual websites, and it'll give you some information about where you can see us, and we will both, Dominique and myself, we are going to be at the Black Women's Expo, which is going to be here in Chicago from March the 28th through the 30th, but we both will be there. I'll be there all 3 days. She will be there on March 29th. So if anyone is listening and you want to come out and purchase your autographed copies of the book, She's Out, I'm In, Solutions to Seven Relationship Problems, you can definitely come to the Black Women's Expo, which will be at the McCormick Place here at Chicago. And again, please visit our website. It'll have all the information on it for you at www.shesoutimin.com. That's www.shesoutimin.com.
Wonderful. Thank you, ladies. You've been fabulous. And next week, our guest is also an author, and she has survived through very serious and very graphic abuse. And we're going to listen to her story and really hear how good and awesome our God is. So this book will keep you from having to be in that type of predicament. But for those of you who are there, because this episode is just for you. Until then, I want you to continue to be your best hero and don't let yourself down, because the God who created you would never let you down. He's always by your side, and he designed us to worship him and to glorify him in all that we do, including our relationship.
I was lost, but you came and found me. You left your throne, thinking about me. You bled and died to show me mercy. You gave your all because you saw my need. I was empty, but you came and filled me. I was blinded, but you helped me to see. I was broken, but you made me whole again. I felt like nothing, but you gave me confidence.